Boom.
Yep, here we go. Adam Sachs here.
And we're back. So we left off our last show going through family law, the basics of family law, which incorporated what we put on the first show of intelligently approaching your legal problem with intelligence rather than emotion, being proactive, going out and seeking counsel, or at least getting the advice of counsel by interviewing a couple lawyers, and then get a game plan after assessing what the other side has in resources and accessibility to handling a legal problem against you. So then we diverged over into family law, and we concluded with the types of custody: child custody, which is legal custody, and physical custody. And we went into child support and how that's calculated with the computer programs, and visitation, which translates into percentages. And we also concluded that part with the termination date of child support and obligation for child support, unless there's an exception for a special needs child. Now we come up to the very next section of family law, spousal support.
Ooh. Alimony.
Everyone's favorite subject.
Now, this is the one that partners really resent. When women have to pay it, they really resent it. But the theory had been that a woman had generally made the greater sacrifice, that she had given up her career and she had given up the chance to do other things, and her husband runs off with the secretary and she's left with nothing. So they created this idea of alimony, which was meant to be something temporary that the woman would have in order to get herself back on her feet. And the problem is that it went beyond the temporary.
Yeah, I was going to say, what happened to the temporary part? It always seems to be going on forever.
A lot of women get alimony, they start living off of it, and they just never go back to work. And it had been for a long time in California, for example, that if you had a long-term marriage, which meant that you had a marriage that was at least 10 years, that the alimony would never end. And the woman could keep collecting it until she got remarried, and these women would make sure, naturally, to never get remarried. There had been different kinds of versions where it had been terminated once the woman started cohabitating with another man, but that was always, you know, kind of hard to prove, and you don't know if she's having a guy over, if he lives there, or who knows what. So marriage became the general standard. It's one thing, you know, for a guy to pay his ex-wife for 2 or 3 years while she gets back on her feet or something, but this has become the kind of thing that's become permanent. And I think that that creates a lot of anger and hostility and resentment. The other question you have to ask is how much it's supposed to be. And in that context, it's very complicated, because what happens with alimony is that they calculate the idea based on the standard of life that she had. So if a woman was married to a guy and they were living it up in Beverly Hills and they had a very expensive, high class, classy kind of life, then she might get $20,000, $30,000, $50,000 a month in alimony, which is a lot.
I always thought spousal support only went up to two.
2,000?
No, too much.
Oh, too much. Okay. I know, two of what?
Too much.
You know, when a guy's married and then he gets divorced and, you know, literally for 20 years, 30 years, he's still paying alimony to a woman he was only married to for 10 years. That's pretty disturbing. Now, what happens to a woman now? We know this is an issue, right, Richard, that a woman is supposed to be, like everyone else, self-supportive, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when you have your ex-wife, and maybe she's got a real estate license, or maybe she's at one time got her teaching credential or something, and she just literally refuses to work. What does refuse to work mean? I mean, does she have to try to look for a job? Or, I mean, we already see what a snow job that is, right?
Refuse to work means until the court orders her to go get a job or face losing her spousal support.
Right. So at some point, we have to go in and say, if she does not do by X date, at least look for a job or get a job, then the court is going to cut off her spousal support.
Right.
And courts do that, right?
Right. It's called the Gavron order. It's after called the marriage of Gavron.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is, you let's say 3 years go by, the divorce is over, husband or the wife is paying through the nose, and no one's getting up and getting a job. So you run back to court and you say, you know, my spouse is only 32 years old and has been sitting at home for 3 years.
Watching TV.
She, before her married life, she was an LVN, an RN, a nurse, a secretary, an Indian chief, whatever. And she can go do that. And then what the court will do is they will tell her to go get a job. And if you have a smart lawyer like Mr. Sachs, you're going to get an order that says that you need to apply for X amount of jobs per week in person and provide proof of that and come back to court in 2 months to show your efforts. Because we know when we come back in 2 months, she's still not going to be employed because she's going to work it until as long as she can. So after the second or third time, the court will say, guess what? We've been here 3 times now, and you're still not working, so we now are terminating your spousal support. All of a sudden, when they do that, somehow that spouse somehow seems to go out and find a job right away. I don't know how magical that happens, but it's always magic. So you give them they get a grace period to rehabilitate themselves. Some spouses will say, I have no skills. And then the court will order an evaluator to come in and see what your spouse's skills are at their age.
So this is a vocational evaluation.
Right. And then say they're qualified to do this kind of a job or that kind of a job. And then the court expects that person to go out and get a job for what they've been evaluated for. And then that lessens the load for the spouse that's paying, but it gives them hope that there's a termination date in the future sometime.
So will the courts really terminate spousal support?
Yes, they will.
So will that just leave the woman destitute?
No, because they only do that after they've warned the lady or man several times. We talked about our earlier show about the fella who sat on the couch for 7 years while his wife made $350,000 a year as an accountant in a big firm, and he did nothing, and he still got spousal support, a hefty amount.
Amazing.
I wonder, was that terminated by a certain date? I think when the house was sold or something like that.
It had some expiration.
Yeah, it had an expiration.
But courts seem to be disfavoring just strictly open-ended orders now, right?
Right.
It's not fair. I mean, it's crazy.
No, they are making people contribute to society. They have these general philosophies, the court, as far as, you know, contributing towards the maintenance of the children equally, frequent contact with the parent, and continuous and frequent contact. And it's the same thing here. So if you're young enough, the court is not going to let you cruise along. If you're older, they'll give you some more slack. But
wait a minute. Let's talk about that for a second.
Okay.
So what you're saying is that if a woman, the ex-wife-to-be, is 28, let's say,
uh-huh,
fairly able-bodied,
uh-huh,
you would say, well, you know, let her get a job. She can do something.
Correct.
And if she keeps saying, I've got no skills, it's not fair, I can't do anything, then you get a vocational evaluation to set her up with what she can do.
Right.
Now, on the other hand, in all fairness to older people, if you have a woman who's in her 60s, let's say, and she spent her entire life taking care of her family and being a housewife, right, even if she's in fairly good health, it's a different question as to what she can do economically, right?
Exactly, because of the background's different.
Right, it's going to be a lot harder for someone in their 60s to get an entry-level job.
Correct, but you know, that's changing a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are lots of jobs for older people now. Greeters at Target and Kmart. And you see a lot of older people working in the service industry, restaurants, things like that.
Yeah.
And so there are jobs, but yes, it's tougher. Way tougher. And if you've, your whole lifestyle, that goes to part of a divorced lifestyle. What was the lifestyle? What was the arrangement? You sat at home, raised the kids, never had a job in your life. that person's going to be getting their lifetime spousal. Somebody on less than 10 years, if they had a job at some time in their life and they're still young enough, they'll have to go do something. But it's not an automatic freebie forever. It's becoming less and less frequent. But they'll give you slack for a reasonable amount of time where either spouse could be sitting at home doing nothing. But that end will come.
It just seems like a very awful burden to the ex-spouse to get basically clobbered.
Totally.
And it's meant to be punishing, right?
I don't know if it's meant to be punishing, but it's...
Well, it's meant to punish the man. He ran off with his secretary, right? So now he has to pay back his wife for taking her best years from her.
Maybe. I'll have to look up this case. I've got it's about the breeding cow.
The
breeding cow case.
It
stands for taking the best years of your spouse's life.
Right.
And now that no longer milk producing, you get right. rid of him. And I'll have to look it up.
The barren cow, it's called.
Barren cow?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think.
Okay. We'll dig it up.
They thought the cow was barren, but it wasn't.
Oh.
Something like that.
Okay.
The thing is that in this context, right, when the laws became more egalitarian, they started saying that alimony could be for a man or a woman. Correct. It used to be always for a woman.
Right.
You know, today you could have a high income earning woman. I recall Joan Collins, the actress, and she had to pay alimony to her husband when she got divorced from him. But that's unusual, right? Alimony goes mostly to women, I would presume.
It's all what the situation is. I had a big divorce I worked on where involving one of the owners of one of the casinos
mm-hmm.
in Gardena area.
Right.
And they found out that the organizers of the corporations for the casino were laundering drug money.
So, that's not good.
So all of the owners went to jail.
Mm-hmm.
And two spouses of two of the owners were declared innocent spouses.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened was the wife got to collect her criminal husband's...
Her criminal share.
Her husband's criminal share of the casino, which was $153,750 per month.
Nice.
Yeah, that was the number. She went through every dime.
Of course.
Because she was ordered to pay her husband $30,000 per month in spousal support from that criminal income.
See?
While he was awaiting to be sentenced to jail.
Nice.
And he was this Charles Keating, real slick, gray hair, dark tan, good-looking, older guy, financial wizard. So... and then she had to pay his attorney fees and as well as hers and all their properties. They had like two properties. They had one on the Malibu colony, and that was like a $42,000 a month mortgage, and she had like a 30 on another house. So there's $70,000 right there. That's a big chunk of half of her money almost gone.
Amazing.
So it's all and I had another one. The guy was a movie director, and the wife was worth by herself over $40 million.
Wow.
And she had a piece of a distillery company from Germany, one of the largest and oldest, which means they survived World War I, World War II, all that stuff.
Amazing.
And so he stopped making movies, and the wife was paying him spousal support. They had two mansions on this property in Beverly Hills. She lived in one, and he lived in the other one with his young girlfriend.
Very romantic.
Yeah. So it's all, it's turned around. We don't see it a lot,
mm-hmm.
you know, unless we get the big money wife moneymaker and the lesser husband thing.
So what about palimony? How does that work?
Palimony, everybody thinks palimony is family law, and it's not. It's a contract. It's so based in contract law. It only is family law related, if you want to call it that, because you live together in a quasi-marital relationship. You were living together, and someone made promises to someone about something, and then when they break up, they want that promise to be upheld.
But that's a very strange kind of promise. It's an oral promise, right?
Yeah.
So I'm dating a woman, not married to her.
Very young woman.
A young woman, right? Much younger than me, let's say. And I tell her, "Don't worry, baby. I'm always going to take care of you."
That's right.
Or I'm gonna pay your bills. You don't have to worry about bills anymore.
Okay.
So then we get separated, and she says that I promised her.
She's going to say whatever she wants to say.
Well, what's the connection to this kind of thing called palimony?
Well, she's going to say you made a little more than just a promise that I'll take care of you. What does that mean, I'll take care of you? She's going to say, he promised to take care of me and all of my needs. And, well, how long were you dating? 3 years. Oh, really? And did he pay your bills during those 3 years? Yeah.
We'll see, that's the 3 years.
A lot of them. So there you are. You formulated the contract because someone executed on their promise.
Right.
And
there's expectation.
Exactly. Versus you were dating for 3 years and you never gave her a dime. Hmm. So then how all of a sudden you have this new obligation with some vague terms. But if you were acting on it and she's got something to do about it, then great. That's why it goes back to responding to your legal problem in a rapid fashion. Don't let it sit around.
Right.
Don't break up and 3 years later. Well, you know, I had this guy and he's giving me a little money there, blah, blah. Where'd you break up 3 years ago?
Yeah.
Well, why'd you wait so long? Well,
I always hear people tell me stories like that. Like they're talking about they need to get a divorce. They've been procrastinating. They got a file. They when did you separate? And it's like 6 years ago, 7 years ago.
I had one where the couple were together for like 12 years and they made like seven kids. And then he dumped her.
Not nice.
No spousal support.
Right.
No nothing.
Never were together.
They were together, lived together, called themselves husband and wife. And the whole deal. But then when he found something newer and younger, goodbye. And that was it. She had to go for palimony. And the worst part about it is one of those, he didn't make a lot of money. He had basically enough money to squeak by for the month, you know. So that's the deal with spousal support. It's a real loaded area because there's so many facets to it. Depending upon your lifestyle, what you did all your life, when you did work, how old are you now? What is the market for you? Do you have skills? Do you have no skills? Can you go to school and get trained? You know, that sort of thing. And that's kind of like an overall, the spousal support. If you move in with somebody, that's a good grounds to make an order to terminate spousal support because you're theoretically cohabitating with someone.
Right.
And there's a lot of law against it, but there's a lot of law that says to cut it off. And that's usually the norm. We did that. We had this lady move in with her lawyer boyfriend. And then eventually we had it cut off. She wasn't working or nothing, but all of her bills.
And in that case, I think the court said that it wasn't fair for her ex-husband to have to support the new boyfriend.
Exactly. And the court also said, you're not showing me that you're overdue on your bills.
Right.
That you're not saying that you're like 2 months late on your credit card.
She should have been practically in default.
Yeah, or you're getting kicked out of your place because you didn't pay the rent. All of these are current, so it's coming from somewhere and you are not working. Okay? So, it's a loaded area and it's because it's got so many facets to it, just like entitlement to child custody and who's done what and what's good and what's bad. You know, so that moves us on to the next phase. We've decided what happens to the kids and who gets them and when and how and where. We've decided what's happening with the spouse as far as her getting stuff, when, where, and how. And so that leaves us now with the rest of the pie. And the rest of the pie is real property and personal property.
Right.
Real property is easy. You get an evaluator, an appraiser. Versus the fair market value versus what's on the loan, and now you have your equity and what's left. Let's say you separate and one spouse has been paying the mortgage and you haven't. We talked about a case we worked on once before where it was 10 years of paying the mortgage and paying of everything, and then the husband got a reimbursement. So for every month that you're not paying your half, the other half is going to get it. Let's say you've owned a house before you got married. It's in your name, and now you're married 10 years, and you've been paying on the mortgage. That spouse who's not on the mortgage or on the title still gets a community interest, because every dollar you pay on that mortgage is community property, because you said, I do. Remember, we said after you say, I do, everything is community. So you acquire a percentage. And then if you want to split the house up, it's divided two ways. You have this thing called More Marsden. And what that does, that calculates the one spouse's premarital interest, and then the other spouse's community interest, as well as the owner's community interest. So the owner, who has a name on it, gets two credits, a separate property credit for a certain period of time up to the date of marriage, and then a community property credit, while the other spouse also gets a community property credit. So it was two credits to one and one credit to the other. Right, Adam?
Absolutely.
And let's see, what's the other math one? The other math one is Pereira Van Camp.
Pereira and Van Camp.
That's always a good one.
Active versus passive.
Right. This goes to the ownership of a business. And what that means is if you go to the shop every day to work, or you go to your office every day to work, and you do that all the whole time during the time you're married, that means you are spending your marriage time at work. They call that community effort.
So you're doing active work in a business that supports the community.
Exactly. So
not just an investor.
Right. And let's say the business was started by your wife's father. So your wife's father started the business. Your wife now is the president, and it does a huge amount of money. Let's say it does $50 million a year in business, and your wife pulls $1 million a year, and that sort of thing. Well, since you went to the business every day, you now are claiming you have an ownership in the business. That's called Pereira. And that's another mathematical calculation. We have a mathematical calculation for More Marsden. We have a mathematical calculation of child support and spouse support. And now we have a mathematical calculation for your ownership in a separate property business. So Pereira Van Camp means it's 50, Pereira means it's 50-50. You split it down the middle. However, the other case after Van de Camp is called Van Camp. What happens there, you've got rich people who inherits a company, and then you get divorced, and the guy who owns the company, or the girl who owns the company, says, I don't run the business. I have people that run the business. I've got a president, I've got a vice president, I've got a treasurer, I've got a board. I collect dividends, and I go to the golf course every day. So under that scenario, you're not expending a community effort onto the business. It keeps its separate property connotation, and you get a very small percentage, if any, as to the valuation of the business. And then you split the pie up after that. Usually when you start getting into Pereira and Van Camp and large estates, you know, you own apartment buildings and you've got stocks, like 60, 70, 80 stocks, 100 stocks. When you're in that area of family law, you hand it over to accountants that specialize in adding up all the numbers to figure out how much is yours and how much belongs to the other spouse.
Right.
And they do that because you have an expert in everything. Lawyers are not supposed to be accountants, and judges aren't supposed to be psychologists. So when you need to have something deal with psychology, you hire a psychologist. You need somebody with money, because there's a lot of money and a lot of tracking, you hire an accountant. Especially when there's hidden money, we call that tracing. So let's say you had an inheritance 20 years ago, and I want a piece of it now. Because like I say, you bought our home with it, and then we sold our home, and then we bought another home with that original money, and we sold it, and blah, blah, blah. And we bought three or four or five homes with it. You cannot distinguish what your original inheritance anymore is. It's all mine, 50%. Well, an accountant will trace it down to the very beginning and come up with the exact dollar that is separate property.
That's how they split it up.
Right. So that's how we have specialists within family law. You have an accountant tell us what the money is because a court recognizes them as an expert. You have a psychologist to tell you how crazy you are or the spouse is or the kid is. And the court listens to that. So everybody's got a specialization that they testify on. And then that's how the court arrives at a decision. If you don't come to an agreement, you go to trial. And you present everything and all the factors we just spoke of. And then the judge will make a decision. And either you'll come up with a contract called the marital settlement agreement, and then that is converted into a final order called the judgment.
Right.
And that's it for family law, everybody.
That can't be it.
That's it.
When they get into conflicts, conflicts tend to be over the children and money, right?
Always.
So what are the two conflicts? Over children, custody, visitation, moving away?
Uh-huh.
What's the common pitfalls?
Everybody wants the kids with themselves, 100% of the kids, and it never works that way. Just never works that way.
This is like King Solomon, essentially.
Yeah. So they come up with an answer. Someone is unhappy. And that's that. This mother the other day testified in court that her daughter's hamster died, so she'll get used to being away from her father.
Mm.
You know.
That was not very pleasant to hear.
Not very, but then she was serious. And the fact she was serious, and that kind of stuff coming out of the mother's mouth, that's a legitimate parenting explanation to ripping your child from another parent. Oh, she'll get used to it, the hamster die. The father of the child being a hamster? Yeah. So that shows us how bright she was.
Now, that was a move-away case, right?
Sure was.
So that's the La Mouche case?
Sure was.
So how does a move-away case work?
Well, you have to evaluate how tragically it's going to affect your child not having the other parent around. So the court has a hearing on the psychological effect of the child against the parent. And they ask you questions about where you're moving to, why you're moving there, what's your parenting plan, meaning what's your visitation plan for the other parent, where they're going to go to school, who's going to pay for it, who's going to pay for transportation costs from Missouri to Los Angeles, since you're moving to Missouri. How is the relationship not going to be disrupted? How are you going to ensure the frequent and continuous, those are those buzzwords we spoke about
frequent
earlier.
Frequent and continuous.
Continuous contact with the non-custodial parent. And everybody always comes up and says, they're going to text, they're going to FaceTime. And 99.9% of the time, that is out the window once they're gone.
Right.
Gone. Oh, the phone wasn't working. Oh, I had it turned off. Oh, she's sick. Oh, he scraped his knee. Oh, he's watching a show. Oh, he's practicing his clarinet. Oh, he just came up with a new algebraic formulation that Einstein couldn't come up with, you know. He's studying for his MCATs. Wait a minute, he's in eighth grade. When he is studying for his MCATs?
MCATs.
You know? We heard it all. And that's what happens. So once they're gone, they're gone. So you got to plan ahead and make sure this stuff doesn't happen. So what do? You call the law offices of Adam Sachs. And
indeed.
And
that is the smart thing to do, isn't it, Howard?
That's right. It's the only thing to do.
Uh-huh.
It's the only thing to do.
So what's it?
Right. So that's what I got on the family law deal. And next week, the next show, we'll get into civil. Because that covers everything else that's not in family law. It's either family law or civil.
That's only half an hour.
We did over an hour on the other part. Okay. That you're pulling off of there. I did 2 hours.
I'm gonna